You can meet and hear Ross Douthat, Matt Harrison, Carol Tobias, Hans Feeney, Alan Carlson, Wesley Smith, Will Whedon, Jonathan Fisk, and Tom Korchak at the 2019 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th in Chicago. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The one and only 2019 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 7th and 8th at Concordia University, Chicago.
You stumbled upon an opportunity. I can make you rich. Rich enough to impress a princess.
What would I have to do?
There's a cave of wonders. Bring me the lamp.
Great one who summons me, I stand by my oath, loyalty to Wishes 3.
I'm kidding. Watch this.
Watch out! You done wound me up! You ain't never had a friend like me!
That's the trailer for the remake of the movie Aladdin. Now it's in live action and CGI, the voice of Will Smith. Many people going to see this film are wondering, how does Will Smith fill the shoes of the legendary the old genie, who was not only the voice of that genie, but in a lot of ways, the personality of that genie. And how does this film fare as a musical? Does it actually work? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll review the movie Aladdin with Pastor Ted Geese. And then Carol Tobias will join us. We're going to get an update on state abortion legislation. She's president of National Right to Life. Joy Pullman joins us after that. There is a recent report on declining test scores under Common Core, contrary to how Common Core was sold and what its advocates expected. Kids are not doing well with this new educational model. Joy Pullman, author of the book Education Invasion, will tell us about it a little bit later. Then it's This Week in Pop Christianity Today, Jennifer McClare's teachings on spiritual warfare. Pastor Chris Roseboro of Fighting for the Faith will be our guest. Joining us to review the movie Aladdin, Pastor Ted Geese. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. And he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
A lot of fans of the, I believe it was 1992 animated feature from Disney, are going to be wondering, with this CGI live action remake, really one thing, and that is, how well does Will Smith fill the shoes of the late Robin Williams in that genie role?
Yeah, it's, he does a good job considering it's very hard to do. I mean, that was a long time ago, and yet still people just have that Robin Williams performance in their minds. And apparently he went in and recorded 16 hours of audio dialogue that they went through it all and kind of, because he would just go off on tangents and stuff and like freewheel it. And they went in and they kind of crafted his performance for the film. This guy was like a really comic genius, right? So it's hard to fill those little genie shoes, I guess. But he does a pretty good job. He's got something that he's working against, Will Smith does, that Robin Williams didn't have. Because before it was just an animated film, so they didn't have to worry about the animation looking lifelike. It looked cartoonish because it was a cartoon. So here you've got like this kind of additional thing that he has to deal with, which is, you know, he's this big blue genie and they're trying to make it look sort of realistic, but at the same time, it just doesn't, because it's very obviously CGI. So for Will Smith, he tends to do better, or he comes across probably even more charming and more relatable when he's disguised as a person at various points along the way, and he's having more normal interactions with people. That's where he seems to have a little more charm in his own performance. But so he's kind of doing his best.
Does it enter that uncanny valley at times as a viewer when you're looking at this very familiar visage of Will Smith that has been either modified or reproduced through computer graphics?
Oh yeah, we're up and down and all the way through and all over the place in the Uncanny Valley for sure. And he actually has another movie coming out this year called Gemini Man. It's in post-production, and in that he plays himself and a younger version of himself. So the whole entire film is going to have this kind of facial capture recognition kind of thing. So he's like a clone of a hitman, and they're pitted against each other. So there's going to be more Uncanny Valley stuff with Will Smith this year.
So talk about the original and what's different, if anything, in the live-action CGI remake.
Well, spoilers. So if you guys, if you don't want to know what's different, you know, I'm going to mention a couple things that would be spoilers. So the difference would be length, right? The first film is like 90 minutes or something. It's very tight. It just kind of zips right through. So this film it's a 2 hour plus runtime. So there's some additional things. There's some tweaks to the story, but there's also some additional things, like it begins with Will Smith on a boat with some kids, and he's telling his kids about this story. So you assume that as he tells the story, he's telling it to his kids, and that he's just made himself into the genie in the story. So that kind of comes back later, but it's a different kind of thing. So they basically just put the genie to work right at the very beginning of the whole thing. Will Smith is right at the very beginning. He gets top billing in the movie anyways. So there's that. There's and as a result of all of that, there's also this side romantic little story for the genie and Princess Jasmine's handmaiden. So that's an addition to the story that wasn't in the cartoon originally. So there's some things like that. Also, at the end, our main guy, Aladdin, doesn't become the Sultan in the end. Princess Jasmine becomes the Sultan, and he's like Prince Philip to Queen Elizabeth, basically. So he doesn't ascend to the place of Sultan like in the original cartoon. So in a nutshell, the cartoon, the story that is told pretty much in both of these cases is Aladdin is a street urchin in the port city of Agrabah. It's an Islamic city, and he's a thief, and he falls in love with Princess Jasmine, the Sultan's daughter, and also then gets mixed up in this nefarious plot from the Grand Vizier, Jafar, who needs a diamond in the rough to go into a magic cave and get the lamp. And the lamp is where the genie is, resides in the lamp. And then both Jafar and Aladdin kind of want the lamp, and the, you know, wacky hijinks ensue. But he has to, like, there's a rule that the princess has to marry a prince. So one of his wishes is to be a prince so that he would be eligible to marry the Princess Jasmine. So that's, and there's a flying carpet and the rest of it. So that's what happens. And it all comes to a head at the end, and they live happily ever after.
The kind of side business that Disney has going that becomes its best advertising are the earworms that it creates through its animated features. Just think of something like Let It Go. And it, once it's attached itself to the brain of a five-year-old girl, the parents are going to buy the DVD.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Does this have one of those?
It does, and very much like Let It Go from Frozen, there's a kind of a female empowerment kind of a anthem for Princess Jasmine. It's called Speechless. It's got lines in it like, I won't be silenced, you can't keep me quiet, won't tremble when you try it, all I know is I won't go speechless. So, and that's also important for another reason. Aladdin in 1992, it won two Oscars at least, one for the score and one for the A Whole New World song. So here, by adding a brand new piece of music to the film, it now becomes eligible for an Oscar for best song, possibly, right? So Disney will probably throw some money behind that to lobby for it to be in contention for that. And some of the guys that were involved in writing music for La La Land, which was an Oscar-winning film that we talked about a couple years ago now, that duo was involved in writing the song. So they've got some pedigree. They brought in some people to help kind of put that together.
So again, with the changes that were made, you spent some time in your review kind of wondering out loud whether or not the changes were made for purely financial reasons, Disney is a business after all, or whether or not it's trying to open, again, for financial reasons, kind of open its market to places culturally, maybe where Disney hasn't been able to reach. How does it deal with the cultural issues that, gee, back in 1992 was such a simple time. You could have somebody wear a turban and it didn't have any political implications.
Well, even back in 1992, there was some stuff. Like they had, since we're just talking about the songs and things, like 1992 was right after the Persian Gulf War. And there was some sensitivity to things immediately after the movie came out. They didn't like some of the lyrics, particularly, and there's an opening song, Arabian Nights. And originally it said something like, "Oh, I come from a land from a faraway place where the caravan camels roam, where they cut off your ears if they don't like your face. It's barbaric, but hey, it's home." So even back in 1992, people went, "Whoa, that's too much." So when it was on home video and was released afterwards out of theaters, all of a sudden it changed to where it's flat and immense and the heat is intense. It's barbaric, but hey, it's home. And now in this one, that is sung by Will Smith now, and it's where you wander among every culture and tongue. It's chaotic, but hey, it's home. So bye-bye to barbaric, and it's softened, right? Because there is this, you know, sensitivity over time to these things. But you're right. I mean, overall, mostly it was a kind of a simpler time, and Disney was a smaller company. And while, you know, their films and people knew about Disney in different places in the world, the markets weren't the same as they are now. So there are some things that they capitalize on from this story. Even in the 1992 version of it, Jasmine is kind of almost more South Asian. So she has Raja the Tiger, right? Like that's kind of more Indian than it is Middle Eastern, right? So there's that. So they kind of capitalize that on that even further. And her mother is from a South Asian background. So that kind of adds to it. Although her mother isn't present, they talk about the mother in the film. And of course, they still have the Tiger. But then they have all of these kind of Bollywood flourishes all over the place that then would make it more, I guess, congenial to people in India or Pakistan or Afghanistan or places, or that South Asian, market, even in the diaspora around the world, like people will kind of like those little flourishes. And at the same time, though, apparently Disney had actual cultural advisors on this. So they wanted to make sure that they didn't really have Caucasian people playing characters that were Middle Eastern. So whether or not the people were born in places like Great Britain or somewhere like that, they wanted to make sure that their ethnic backgrounds, you know, were from places like Tunisia or Turkey or Iran or Egypt or Iraq or India, or places that are more geographically centered around the Middle East.
I'm fascinated by, I can see in an age where cultural appropriation is considered a high crime, Disney can't win. I mean, if you want to put in a dance number that's Bollywood style, you have culturally shifted this story significantly. There's no doubt about that. But are they in a position where if they're trying to depict any culture nowadays, they're in a kind of a losing position?
They're in a bit of a pickle. I mean, those are kind of light touches that they add in. It's definitely recognizable, but it's not like complete appropriation. The really weird part about it is that it's possible that this Aladdin story itself is complete cultural appropriation. But of course, it's from a time when they didn't even have the term cultural appropriation. It was something called Orientalism in the 18th and 19th century, particularly in France, but other places in Europe. You had this kind of art movement in literature, in theater, in the fine arts called Orientalism. And Orientalism is one of these things where archaeologists or writers or authors or people would go to the Orient, and I'm using air quotes there because at the time the Orient included the Middle East and Asia Minor, right? So modern day Turkey and then the places we would normally call the Middle East now, all the way into China. So there was an archaeologist and writer, this Antoine Galland, from France who went there and found a 14th century manuscript. And from that produced a French translation of the 1001 Nights. So the Arabian Nights. And it's a number of volumes long originally. But the Aladdin and the Magic Lamp, there's no provenance, or there's no textual tradition or transmission prior to his writing it. And he says that it was from Aleppo in Syria, and he was told the story, and then a couple years later he wrote it down. So then it only shows up in Arabic, that story only shows up in Arabic after it's originally published in France in French. So it's very possible that, you know, as part of this Orientalism is that, you know, people, even if they hadn't been there, would kind of make things that were what they thought it was like there, or envisioned, or based on the material culture that flowed back to France. So you end up with kind of like 18th, 19th century French Middle Eastern fan fiction. And it's very possible that this whole story could be a complete kind of fan fiction appropriation of another culture from a European source. Most people going to this movie aren't going to think about that, but if they take a second to look up the background of the story, the original folktale of Aladdin and the Magic Lamp, they are going to run into this.
We're talking with Pastor Ted Geese, reviewing the movie Aladdin. On the other side of the break, we've come to expect from Disney the occasional gentle, politically correct pot shot. Does Aladdin contain any? We'll find out after this. In the neighborhood is dressing up to be there too, and we're gonna have a ball just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies, who cares what picture you see? Are you looking for a first communion, confirmation, or graduation gift? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May is the new bonded leather cover edition of Luther's Small and Large Catechisms. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040 and request the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May, Martin Luther's Small and Large Catechisms, 1-800-325-3040.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Are you living in central Iowa and longing for a church where the gospel is boldly confessed in all of its purity? Are you tired of hearing the latest purpose-driven How to Live Your Best Life Now TED Talk? Are you desperate to hear the preaching of the cross, which brings you and your children the knowledge, peace, and comfort of the gospel? Then come to Holy Cross Lutheran Church. Located in Carlisle, Iowa, at the southeast corner of Des Moines, we're a short ride from everywhere in the city. Visit our website, holycrosscarlisle.org.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority, they've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're reviewing the movie Aladdin. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. Ted, I'm curious, we've kind of come to expect the occasional gentle, politically correct pot shot in some of these remakes of the Disney classics. Does Aladdin engage in any of that?
Well, I mean, they have things in there. I mean, this is maybe a softer touch than even a movie like Beauty and the Beast, where they had kind of a very clearly LGBTQ, kind of a gay character in it, Gaston's like servant in that one. Here it's a little more, some of that stuff is a little bit played for laughs. There's a little tiny bit here and there. There's a couple moments in like some big dance numbers where Will Smith is kind of in drag for one or two little spots, but he is a genie that's changing his appearance constantly and it goes by very quickly, right? So there's that stuff. It's all very soft and easygoing. There is, of course, like at the beginning of the movie, there's this chase scene where Aladdin's being chased through Agrabah and he like breaks into going from house to house and room to room and building to building. He breaks into a spot that's a school room with female, all female students and a female teacher. And the setting is like ninth century, you know, generic ninth century port city somewhere in the Middle East. And it's super duper unlikely that they're going to have like education for girls there. So that's one of these kind of like more modern flourishes and touches. It's a westernized addition to it. So this is where they kind of get caught, right? So on the one hand, they're trying to be the sort of movie that people in the Middle East might like. But on the other hand, they have this demand to be culturally sensitive when it comes to political correctness on this other hand. So then you have to wonder, like, where exactly is the audience for this? Like, I guess they're trying to do as broad an audience as possible, but that might not go over as well in a place like Saudi Arabia, where women have just only begun to be able to drive cars, right? And then the character of Princess Jasmine is a much more feminist, obvious character in this than even she was in the 1992 cartoon.
Is there any recognition that the culture that they're attempting to depict, however fictionally, is in essence inseparable from Islam?
Well, there's things. I mean, when the Sultan at one point has his, I'm not sure what the technical term for the kind of turban he wears over top of his head comes off, and he's wearing a little hat underneath that's kind of associated with like imams. So there's that kind of thing in there. They do, I think there's a, you know, couple brief mentions to God, and I can't remember if it was Allah or not. But I mean, it's not pre-Islam Middle East. It's not just Arabic from like the, you know, 5th century. It's older than that, so that there are like minarets and things. There's stuff that it's definitely Islamic in nature. But then again, now it's a kids movie, so, you know, it's not necessarily going to be very harsh, but you do have like within the Muslim like Quran, you do have like the punishment for stealing or theft is to have your hand cut off. And that, of course, is never brought up. So you have a main character who's a thief. At no point is the threat of or the worry of having your hand cut off a part of it. So they're kind of trying to, you know, thread the needle on this. So it's not 100% all in, but it's also, it's a very westernized, idealized kind of soft picture of this. And it's also kind of generic, right? It doesn't have the sense of being real. Like they're not shooting for kind of like, even the clothing and the sets and things, it feels very staged. It doesn't feel like it's a lived in place. The clothing is all like right off the rack, clean. It's not like they're trying to give you a realistic picture of a city like that at that time, or, you know, what Islamic culture or the faith of Islamic people might be like at that time either.
So it's very idealized.
Very much so, which is understandable because the cartoon was idealized, and then this is also an idealized presentation.
Talk a little bit about the fact that the main character here, or the male lead, is a thief.
Yeah, this is kind of interesting. So, like, if you're a Christian family and you're attending, you're going to this movie and you're watching this, you know, afterwards you're going to need to have probably a conversation with your kids about the seventh commandment. So you want to, you know, review that, talk about it afterwards. So you know, like the whole premise that, you know, he's kind of in poverty and he's stealing to kind of get ahead. That's not an excusable reason for theft, right? So you don't want to be doing that. You don't want to take your neighbor's money or possessions or get them in any kind of dishonest way, which would be theft, but help him to improve and protect his possessions and income, right? So that's definitely something to talk about because he is the hero. Then also they've added a little backstory in for Jafar, where Jafar himself had been the Grand Vizier, the one who's trying to steal the kingdom away. He himself had been a street urchin and, you know, street thief. But he has a line in the film where he says, steal an apple, you're a thief, steal a kingdom, and you're a statesman. So you get this kind of thing going on where it's like, if Aladdin keeps down his path the way he's going, especially with the power he's acquired because of this genie, the worry is that he could end up kind of like a Jafar, right? So there's that in there as well. And then also, you know, if you have a copy of the Book of Concord or the Large Catechism, which is in the Book of Concord, go and read the section on the Seventh Commandment in there, because Luther doesn't let the rich and powerful off easy when it comes to theft. Their theft is just as damnable as a poor person's theft, or a theft through laziness or whatever. So these are kind of rich areas to have a conversation, because you can kind of bounce off of what you saw into a more real world conversation about these things through the lens of the Confessions and the Catechism.
One of the things I'm wondering more generally about this is these cartoons appeal because cartoons are extremely simplified versions of life, both visually and in their content. As Disney makes this attempt to use the technology to essentially make live action cartoons, in the ones you've seen, and you've seen a number of these already,
mm-hmm.
Do you think it's working? Do you think it has the same kind of staying power, this stick in your mind with regard to the images, not only the songs, as the cartoons did?
I don't know. This is the hard thing, because the cartoons precede all of this. So people have kind of a long-term relationship with those cartoons. Like, they refer to them as classics. They come out, they go back in the vault, etc. Watching these, there's always going to be the comparison back against the original cartoon. Now, they've kind of gone to the area where there's going to be some, you know, sequels and things that, you know, they may have some more creative venues there to do something different. But overall, these are kind of like silver as compared to gold. They're just not quite as good on the whole. This one is better than some of them. Like, it's better than Dumbo. Like, I think this one's better than Dumbo. They're not as good as the originals in a lot of ways. They're just a little flat. It's not that they're bad. They're just not really, really good.
Do they work as musicals? Does this one work as a musical?
Well, this one does. And they've had some of these remakes where the original films were musicals, where they had more music in them. This one, it would be a capital crime probably for many Disney fans if they didn't include all of the songs that they most desperately wanted to hear again. And that would be a reason why they had Will Smith in this part, because he could act and he's also has a bit of a music career as well. And they bring in a little bit of his, you know, old school 90s hip hop, kind of late 80s kind of hip hop, kind of, I don't know, flair to a couple of the songs. So overall, the musical parts are good. They're better than you'd expect. That's kind of what pushes this one over the edge to be a little better than other live action remakes that they've done. And of course, now we have the anticipation of this Lion King live, I'm using giant air quotes here, live action remake, because it's again, that one is going to really be a cartoon. It's just a CGI computer graphic cartoon, as it were. But that one has all of these recognizable, memorable songs, and they're not going to want to chintz out on those either. So this is one of these ones where they had to do it, and they did an admirable job, I think, a better job than you'd expect.
Finally, do they also eventually have to get around to doing one of these for the a Disney classic of all Disney classics, at least in our children's or grandchildren's memory, and that's Little Mermaid.
Yes, but it's not in the immediate future, as far as I can tell. Like, one thing that I noticed was is that these were kind of coming out. They tried out doing this back in the 1998, 2000 with 101 Dalmatians and 102 Dalmatians. And then they took a bit of a break, and then they tried Alice in Wonderland with Tim Burton. And then they were kind of doing one a year. They kind of got into this pattern of one a year. They had Maleficent, which is based on the Sleeping Beauty. And then they kind of had one a year along the way. But then this 2019, they just hit the ground. Like, they've got this Dumbo, which we talked about. They've got The Lion King coming up. They just had this Aladdin. They have Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, which is a sequel to Maleficent. And they also have slated this year Lady and the Tramp. So it looks like they're going to go through their whole catalog doing this. Well, or almost their whole catalog. I don't think they're going to do things like The Black Cauldron or Song of the South, but which is kind of half cartoon, half not cartoon, that one. And also very controversial. So I don't know. I think you're going to see a Little Mermaid one along the way.
Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He is pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. You could read his review of Aladdin under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Ted, thanks.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll be talking with Carol Tobias, president of National Right to Life, about state abortion legislation. Nadia Bolz-Weber calls for a sexual reformation in her latest book, Shameless. How does her reformation compare with the truths rediscovered during the 16th century Reformation? I've written a review of Shameless in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button on the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Pastor Andrew Abraham details his journey from Catholic priest to Lutheran pastor. The free online Issues Etc. journal.
Emmanuel Press is a Lutheran-owned business in Fort Wayne, Indiana, in operation since 2004. That's 15 years of publishing liturgical and devotional books, 15 years of collaborating with Lutheran authors, artists, and translators. Thanks to our loyal customers and Issues Etc., we look forward to many more years of confessing and teaching the Christian faith. Visit us online at emmanuelpress.us, E-M-M-A-N-U-E-L, press.us.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Are you a high school guy or girl interested in theology and thinking about becoming a pastor or deaconess? Christ Academy High School at Concordia Theological Seminary is the thing for you. Spend 2 weeks worshiping and learning like a seminary student while having fun and building lasting friendships. Join us this summer at Christ Academy from June 16th to the 29th. Visit ctsfw.edu/ca for more info.
LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission exists to support and encourage congregations in rural and small town settings. In partnership with LCMS districts, RSTM is uniquely positioned to make a major impact in revitalization support, community engagement and outreach training, congregational partnership development, and worker support through providing and developing resources geared specifically to rural and small town congregations. Check us out at lcms.org/RSTM or give us a call at our office. We're here to help.